Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Check, 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 check.
You know, is it in this for Slug?
Yes.
You're fine. Okay, all right. Awesome. And awesome.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never used this thing.
Hello, listeners. I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's show, we'll be reviewing the Spooktacular Alley Cat, hearing some tracks from Jesus or Genome and Spell Talk, doing the Daily Calendar Weekly Rundown with Esther Moronio, and listening into archive interviews with Bob Nana from Braid and the director of Hobo with a Shotgun. Recently, the Spooktacular Alley Cat took place. It was presented by the Utah Pride Center, Salty Spokes, and Slug. An alley cat is a kind of a scavenger hunt on your bicycle. It was organized by Alex Bowman from the Pride Center and Esther from Salty Spokes and Slug. It had a carnival theme, so teams involved in this scavenger hunt were forced to play carnival games at each stop. The first group back won. Jemmy, a Slug writer and ad sales rep, formed a team and rode the alley cat, interviewing participants and organizers along the way.
I'm here with Esther, the founder of the Salty Spokes crew. And how did Salty Spokes and the Pride Center team up?
Actually, through Slug. They approached Slug about helping out with the bike event. And Angela Brown suggested me because I've organized bicycle events before. And so I decided that since I have the women's bicycle crew and we had this alley cat set up for last year, but it never happened, that maybe if we teamed up with the Pride Center, they would make it happen. And they did.
Nice. Okay, so I had to ask this one. Who's the one with a carny fetish? Because now I'm kind of curious.
I think that we all are. Salty Spokes is kind of a freak bike crew. It's women and basically anyone who feels that they're a woman is welcome to come. And okay. The Pride Center, you know, has the LGBTQ folk. So I think all of us just kind of have feel like we're freaks on the inside.
Awesome.
And apparently on the outside as well.
No, not at all. I think it's going to go swimmingly today here. I'm here with Alex Bowman, who is with the Utah Pride Center, and this is a different kind of alley cat than usual. How did you guys organize?
So we met up with Esther from Salty Spokes and kind of started working with Slug. We basically just wanted to put on an event that was, you know, easy and got some people on bikes that normally, you know, might not be. Mm-hmm. And then also got some people aware of the Pride Center that, you know, aren't usually the kind of people that hang out with us.
So. Awesome. Who has the carny fetish out of everyone? I have to ask.
I'm gonna put that on a stare, but I think we all have our thing for clowns. Sarah's actually really afraid of balloons, so that's been an issue, but oh well.
Okay, so that's so far that's two for a stare, so that's chalked up two on a stare, so I just want to make a record of that. Thank you very much, Alex, and I look forward to the ride today. So, state your name.
I'm Davey Davis.
And what is the influence of your costume today?
We're doing a circus theme, and I was just thinking about the different circus themes and how that can relate to, like, the queer community, and I asked a couple of my friends to be on my team, and one of them said, let's be the bearded ladies, and it seemed like the perfect fit. So,
awesome.
We've got five bearded ladies, five different interpretations of what that means.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very nice. That's sweet. Thank you, my man.
Yeah, of course.
I look forward to seeing you out there.
Yeah.
So I'm here with Canyon Evans right now. And Canyon, I just noticed that you had yourself some Jimmy John's before the race. Is this a pre-race ritual for you? Is this your strategy here today?
I've never heard of this race until like 10 minutes ago, so I'd say no.
Do you have a feeling that the Jimmy John's will be making a special guest appearance today in the race?
like after we start the race, you're saying I'm gonna throw up, or what are you?
It's just speculation. I don't. It's just. It's an odd pre-race ritual. It's yours. I'm just curious.
Well, I heard this isn't the Tour de France, so I'm hoping that since I didn't eat breakfast up until noon, that I can stomach it.
Okay, so now I have to ask you, because this is just a question I have to know. Would you ever do a Tour de France-themed alley cat? So just an absolutely grueling, gut-wrenching alley cat up monstrous hills for multiple days?
If I had more than 10 minutes notice, probably yes.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you very much, Canyon. So I'm here with Scott before the alley cat race here today, and what's the inspiration with your costume today? What's your theme?
I am the firework man.
Are you going to physically light off fireworks today?
I'm not actually.
Damn, that would have been awesome. So alrighty, is this your first alley cat today?
No, it's not my first alley cat. I've been doing alley cats for like a year and a half, 2 years now.
Awesome, awesome. Are you at all nervous for this one today? Are you nervous that there's gonna be a gut-wrenching course?
No, not at all.
Awesome, awesome. And just out of curiosity, are saddle sores a worries of yours today?
What's that?
Saddle sores. Are they a worries of yours today?
No, not at all.
All right, you're lucky then. Good. Glad to hear it, my man. All right, thank you, Scott. All right, I'm here with Steve. And I want to ask Steve, what is your plan of attack for the face painting right now? Are you going to go with a...
I'm a juggalo.
Woo, woo.
He is a fucking clown love.
He is in fact going with a juggle. Is that at all gonna play? Do you feel like you may at all have someone out for your head? Like any cars will intentionally try to gun for you?
Straight edge kids, them hardcore kids hate me.
So a juggalo is a plan attack. You think it'll make you go faster because you're gonna be trying to outrun the mobs of people chasing you down?
We're off the paint going so fast.
Awesome, awesome plan attack. I'm here with Michael, the stop attendant at the Jesus Tree stop. And what has been the highlight so far, even though this is the first stop and we are the first team to get here?
The highlight so far has been seeing everybody get really excited about getting here on time and having to wait around for the other folks to show up. And so it's an interesting way to do it. You know, these guys are not necessarily riding together. They're all going on it on their own and just kind of waiting for the rest of them to show up.
Awesome, awesome. Well, all right, we're going to kick things off here and I'll probably follow up with you once we get the little festivities started here.
Sweet, thanks.
Okay, I'm here with Keith now, and we're going to ask Keith a difficult question. How many traffic laws did you break? We're not going to use Keith's last name for this because that's incriminating, but how many traffic laws did you break today?
I'd say I broke probably five traffic laws with running lights and not stopping, and I think that's about it.
That is, there's five's not terribly bad as a fellow rider, and I say five all in all is a pretty solid number. Was there any times throughout the race that you were just, did you have an oh shit moment where you thought something was going to go bad?
I had one oh shit moment when Steve on my team was in front of me and an old man pulled out in front of him and about took him out, and that was about my oh shit moment for the ride.
Awesome. Well, only one oh shit moment's pretty good. Okay, I'm here with Sabrina now. And Sabrina, what was your favorite part of the overall race?
Riding downhill.
Which hill was your favorite out of? Actually, there was pretty much only one, wasn't there?
Yeah, coming back to the park.
Nice, coming down 9th South. That probably honestly was the easiest part of the day. All right, I'm here with Michael. And all right, let's have a recap today. Who cheated at the face painting? Be honest with me. Who skimped?
Oh, yeah, there was a little bit of that. Definitely, I don't know the names of the teams. The last team that we had come through was the only one that really did the full face painting the way that it should have been done. And I'm staring at that guy right now here at the track. But and everybody else kind of did a little bit and then got away with it. So I would say we had one team that really actually did it the way it was supposed to be done, and the rest of them did a half-assed job, you know.
All right, well, I'll assess that. As a team rider, I'll definitely say that there was most likely some skimping all around. I will say that the gentleman does look like a juggalo, though.
Yes, he does.
We had everything.
I mean, how is that? Does that look acceptable to you? I mean, that was relatively...
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
You guys were the first.
All righty. I'm here with Pete, and Pete, how do you think you did today?
We won.
You won? All right, fantastic. What do you think that it was that helped you win?
Being wicked
mustache
fast.
Integration.
Mustache integration. Mustache radio power. Wireless, hands-free, and organic.
And organic.
Awesome.
Grown.
Awesome.
Locally grown.
Locally grown. Doesn't get any more local than my chin.
Awesome. What was your favorite part of the race then today? Aside from winning, naturally.
Putting a cock on his neck.
Awesome. So you're clearly the face paint guy. All right, what's your name?
Graham.
All right, we're here with Graham now. And Graham, you participated in the face painting event, correct?
Yeah.
And they got you. You kind of got a nice, you got like a Captain America theme going. Someone drew a cock on your neck here. Yes. Awesome. Did it help you at all today? Did that help?
I think it did.
I think a penis is the most aerodynamic structure in the world. Really. The airfoil.
You can get into
it. Penis.
You got points there. You guys got pretty good points.
Have you ever seen a plane? It looks like dicks.
Awesome.
Rocket ships.
How do you think we went to the moon? With a big dick.
It's dick powered. Awesome. I very much appreciate it here, gentlemen, and congratulations on your wins. What was your team name here today?
Mustache Riders?
The Salty Stashes.
Salty Stashes. Mm-hmm. Alright, well, it's a three-peat of awesome names.
Clean up.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Jemmy Sprankle's team took third place out of the seven teams at the Alley Cats. For more information, check out the Utah Pride Center at utahpridecenter.org or Salty Spokes at saltyspokes.com. And you can find out more information about future events like this on their Facebook page as well. Jesus or Genome is the solo acoustic project of guitarist from Loom and Hi-Fi Massacre, Mike Kundick. He's on vocals and acoustic guitar on this track, Savior, off his new 7-inch split, The Veil Is Lifting.
Watching me from the twilight, can't quite see your faces, but I hear your minds searching for answers, evaluating mine, using the same old tools to define your lives. But I think I can change that if I try. I've been waiting for this my entire life. A way to connect with people more than just part-time. Words are just skin deep, leaving room forever. Please stay with me now, I need a favor. I want you to focus on these lines. Cause I couldn't fake this if I tried. And fires burning long before our time, the kind that keep on burning, though they're hard to find. There is a fire burning deep within the mind. It's where I wore my fingers, want y'all by my side. And I know I might seem a little desperate, road has brought us closer to the union of our souls. I cannot help but feel the barrier in your skull. And though this energy is undeniable, the panic of your ego is begging you to run, run on back home. And lock yourself away in what you already know. Even though your roof is caving in and your foundation is an hallucination, an hallucination. Not a passenger, you are the savior.
Jesus or Genome is currently working on a full release. Check out more work from the band at reverbnation.com/Jesus or Genome. Braid is an influential post-hardcore band from Illinois, active in the mid to late 90s. They went through different lineup changes before breaking up in 99. However, they reunited for occasional tours. Brian Hall interviewed guitarist and vocalist Bob Nana back in April of 2010.
I want to start about the very like beginning inceptions of Braid. Braid kind of started as a side project to Friction. Is that correct?
Sort of, but what happened was, you know, Friction was happening when I was in high school in the western suburbs, and so when I decided to go to U of I in Champaign-Urbana for college, I didn't want to bring my drum with me because I played drums in Friction.
Right.
And I figured there would be no place for me to play them anyway because I had to stay in the dorm
for years.
When you go to school there. So I friend's father had just kind of given me this guitar just to kind of mess around with, and I started teaching myself how to play it. So that's what I ended up bringing down. And it just so happened that one of the first people I had met down there was a drummer. And he liked, it was Roy. He liked all of the same music that I liked. He was, you know, familiar with Friction and familiar with a lot of the music that was going on in the western suburb. We just started Braid. He knew a bass player, and then it just so happened that a friend of mine from the suburbs was a guitar player for a little while. And yeah, I mean, I never really thought of it as a side project from Friction, but it definitely wasn't something that we focused too much of our energy on, especially for that first, like, almost first year of existence, because Braid was around for, you know, almost a full year before we switched Pete Havernick out and Chris came in.
Uh-huh.
And once Chris came aboard, that was when we realized that it could be something that we would want to devote our time to. Because, you know, for that first year, I remember telling people, at that point I was in Sky Corvair too, and Sky Corvair
Kinsella.
Right. And, you know, that was another thing. I never really thought of them as side projects because Friction never really was that big. It took up as, like, so much of my time
right.
that I had to do, like, little side projects because it was more like, you know, dating a bunch of people before you find, like, you know, the person you want to spend a lot of time with or invest time in a relationship with somebody. And so, you know, there was that whole feeling out. So I was in a few bands around that time. It happened to be the one.
Yeah, was there anything you felt you wanted to, like, do differently or like explore differently like with Braid as compared to your previous projects? Was there something that like when you started Braid you wanted to like really really try and like see what you guys could do?
Well, not initially, and that definitely wasn't the impetus to start Braid. Braid was just started because I wanted to be in a band in Champaign, Urbana. I can't really pinpoint the exact moment, but it was around the time that Chris joined the band when we realized that we really did want to do this all the time, and any free time we had from school we were going to devote to Braid.
Mm-hmm.
And that really freed us up to do a lot of like crazy things, and for instance just go on tours all the time and try and record as much as possible and try
yeah.
to get on as many comps as possible. I mean, on the Frankie Welfare Boy CD, it was in the liner notes, "We want to be on your comp."
Yeah.
It was this sort of, it was a weird sort of social networking thing that we were doing in like 1994, 95. Kind of funny to think that that's kind of all the rage right now.
We
loved doing it, and you know, sort of in the back of our minds we thought, well, this was in practice too, you know, practice recording, practice touring, practice getting on comps and just getting our name out there.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't something I wanted to do differently than what I did with Friction or any other band. It's just I had the opportunity to do it. From the back of the room.
It seems like Champaign-Urbana during that time seemed like pretty fertile like music ground. You had a lot of like really really amazing bands kind of coming out around there. Were there any bands in particular that like were really influential or you guys really looked up to or kind of wanted to model yourselves after?
Somewhat. The scene in Champaign when I first got there was, I don't want to say like highfalutin. It was just, it seemed very unattainable to the little guy.
Right, right.
It was all like bands that were getting smashed up by majors left and right.
Yeah.
Poster Children and Hum,
yeah.
And Menthol was another one, and there were like all these bands were sort of getting smashed up by majors, and it was becoming sort of this like college rock hub.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, and along with some other people that were coming from Chicago to Champaign, we were from a scene where it was so inclusive, like everyone was invited, everyone had a band. Like you really, you know, the bands that you looked up to, you were playing shows with them all the time. They
right.
were helping you out or whatever. And so I felt like there were, you know, those bands I really admired, and especially Todd, who was from that area, really admired and looked up to those bands. But I didn't really want to be a part of that.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why we started our own thing. We started playing house shows and setting up house shows. You know, any bands that, like little bands that wanted to come on tour and play Champaign, we were setting up house shows for them. But basically we took the formula that was awesome and really interactive that worked for us in the western suburbs and just kind of cut and pasted into Champaign-Urbana, and it was awesome, and it sort of like gave Champaign-Urbana a boost of like youth.
So the first two albums that you put out, Frankie Welfare Boy and then Age of Octene, which you know, Frankie Welfare Boy was on Divot and then Age of Octene was on Mud, which were kind of like these like pretty small like regional imprints. Do you miss anything like thing from like putting out records on like these like kind of small like regional record labels?
Somewhat, in because like for instance for Frankie, putting out the vinyl and stuff was a hands-on experience. When I say hands-on, I mean we actually hand-painted some of the vinyl, some of the covers.
Yeah.
And you know, it was fun, and but you know, it was work, but it was team building. It was fun. You know, that being said, having a label like Polyvinyl that has all of, that is still personal at a personal level with all of us, but has all of these wheels in motion already to handle certain things, and not to mention they've got longevity and they have staying power, as opposed to, you know, putting out labels like your friend's labels, which is cool.
Right.
Braid had a label for a little while too, you know, Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, yeah, okay. And you guys put out like some singles and stuff on that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily miss it, but I think it was important for us growing and learning about the record business,
right,
the music business, and you know, also us learning how to be a band that put out records and had to work in that sort of framework. So yeah, don't really miss it, but
yeah,
I think it was nice.
But there's some good parts. Prompted the reunion tour?
Yeah, we got together to do like the commentary on the DVD, and we just, you know, we had a good time. And at the time, you know, Mercedes had just done a lot of touring, and sort of burnt out a little bit, and we just thought this was the time to do it because we were all available. The DVD was coming out, and it just made sense.
Yeah, well, that's awesome.
But to be honest, you know, that tour was a lot of fun. But, you know, towards the end, it was sort of getting grueling again. It was sort of all of these old, like, you know, we were fighting a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it was all kind of coming back.
So what prompted the reissue of these early albums?
Polyvinyl.
Nice.
It was all their doing. Yeah, they just said, you know, then they noticed that the Frankie was out of print, and Age of Oxygen was out of print, and movie music was out of print. They're all out of print on vinyl, and so they were just like, let's reissue them. We'll get everyone together and get new art and new masters.
Listening like to these early recordings, what about these early recordings are you most proud of?
Oh, tough question. We flew to LA to do 5 songs, and this was when Roy was still in the band, and we really felt like we were something. We were like really excited about this going there. I don't remember the recording didn't turn out so great. I was having a lot of amp problems. But the songs we recorded in L.A. were Niagara, A Car Came Out of Nowhere, Bridge to Canada, and 2 other ones. One, we might have done Constellation Prize Fighter. Oh, and Do You Love Coffee?
Okay.
Those are the 5 songs we did it there. And that whole experience was like a lot of fun, and just it was cool to travel with everybody and record in some strange place.
Mm-hmm.
I like those songs a lot. I don't think the recording turned out that great. I mean, we were still sort of like, I still was barely could play the guitar, but
right.
I really liked those recordings.
Well,
just
great.
The whole vibe around them.
What do you see Braid's influence being on, like, on today's music and on some of today's bands?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough, and, you know, I talk to, you know, a good amount of people who like to ask about it. I don't really know.
And
what's funny is I almost want, if there's one thing I want people to be influenced by Braid by, is our work ethic. I don't, whether people enjoy the music or not, that's great if they do, but I just want, if there's one thing, there's one takeaway, it's that we just really worked hard. And so that sort of transcends any sort of music you play, whether you, or even if you don't even play music, you know?
Right.
I mean, we were just really, it was all we wanted to do, and we put all of our efforts into it, all of our time, and, you know, that was, it was bad and good, but we were really, really passionate about it, and, you know, that's, I think, what I would want people to be inspired by.
Cool, so you feel comfortable with that being, like, your legacy?
I'd love that. Just the fact, like, wow, even if you hated the music, just the fact that we toured a shit ton,
yeah,
and we put out a lot of stuff, and, you know, like I said, maybe you think it sucks, it doesn't matter. What matters is, like, wow, we put out a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And just worked really hard, and, you know, that's what I hope people take away from it.
You can listen to Braid's reunion EP, Closer to Closed. It's available on Polyvinyl Records. And you can check out our full online exclusive article on Braid from May 2010 on our website at slugmag.com. Time for another edition of our weekly calendar rundown from our daily calendar section, which you can find in the back of our Slug magazines or online at slugmag.com. Today I'm joined again by Esther. How you doing, Esther?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm about an 8 on a scale of 1 to 9.
Yeah, So maybe you have a case of the Mondays?
I do have a little case of the Mondays. We opened the curtain a little bit. Yes, we record these on Mondays, everybody.
A little glimpse,
but no, it's okay. But we're going to jump ahead in the week to Wednesday, October 5th, with an exciting show in the venue. It's this band's 10th anniversary tour.
Minus the bear.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Are you going to that?
Maybe. It's pretty cool. They've been around for 10 years.
But hey, all you Minus the Bear fans, go get it. Don't let our lackluster approach to that day sway you from that. I don't think it would anyways. They're pretty dyed-in-the-wool fans there. Mm-hmm. And Friday, October 7th, there's going to be a really good show at Kilby Court.
Yes, definitely. It's Ty Segall and Spelltop. You can actually check out a feature article on Ty Segall in our September issue by Cody Hudson.
And there's one on Spelltop in the October issue.
Yeah, there is.
I imagine they'll be talking about the upcoming release that about to mention it in our next music segment. We'll play you some new music from Spelltop here coming up in a second. And on that same day, it's a pretty exciting Friday for rap fans, at least. I don't know what it's...
Rap fans?
Yeah, Odd Future. What would you call Odd Future?
Oh, I don't know who they are, but isn't Off like punk punk rock?
Odd Future is hip-hop. Off, exclamation point, sounds like a punk rock band.
Yeah.
That's going to be fronted by Keith Moore or something.
Jinx.
Jinx. And that's it in the venue. Odd Future, the last time I saw them, they made their fans wait in a really long line at South by Southwest and only played 3 songs. So look forward to that, Salt Lake fans. Keep in mind that they don't really like their crowds. So go enjoy that if you want to support a band that doesn't care about you. Okay, I've got way too much beef with Tyler, the Creator. Did that just come out right there?
Is that who's in that?
Yeah. It's all making sense now, isn't it?
Yes.
They're comprised of a bunch of 18 and 9-year-old hooligans, one of whom I think is actually locked up on an island in Samoa. And they're trying to release him. His mom sent him to a sort of work camp out there. Yeah, it's a really long story. Basically, Odd Future is a pretty interesting band if you want to read their backstory.
It's going to be a tough choice for all those hipsters.
Yeah.
Ty Segall or Odd Future?
Oh my god, you're right. The gangster ones go to Odd Future, though. The gangster hipsters?
Gangster hipsters.
Do you know how you can tell they're gangster?
Uh-uh.
I hope you didn't, because I don't really have any. All right, and Saturday, October 8th, this show is probably one of the best of the week. Urban Lounge is going to be featuring Neon Indian, Calm Trues, and Purity Ring. Yes, I said Calm Trues. Do you see what they did there?
Yeah, I do. They switched the C and the T.
Mm. Oh, they're genius. Genius.
I'm a copy editor.
Pin a rose on your nose. Are you familiar with Neon Indian at all?
I actually looked them up, and it sounds like pretty cool music.
Anything else exciting going on that week for you personally, Esther?
I don't know, probably. Who knows at this point?
You're going to keep it open?
Yeah.
I'm going to be celebrating fall.
Yeah, it'll probably be nice and cool.
I'm going to be doing a campfire somewhere.
You should invite me.
Okay, you and your boyfriend and a bag of marshmallows. Doesn't that sound a lot of fun?
Vegan marshmallows.
Exactly, vegan
maybe
marshmallows.
Some Rice Krispie treats.
Oh, hell yeah. As I mentioned before, you can check it out on slugmag.com. We've got a little daily calendar graph. And also on our iPhone app, there's a handy little section there. You can check out all the upcoming dates and events on the daily calendar. It's definitely the best resource in town for when you want something fun to do at night and you don't know what you want to do. Thanks, Esther.
Yeah, thank you.
Spelltalk originally started in Ogden under a different name, but after moving to Salt Lake City, changed up their sound a little bit and made some changes in their lineup. They won the CWMA competition in 2010 and were the cover band for our August 2010 issue. They recently released their album Touch It this past Friday at the Urban Lounge. Here's Candyland from that new album. We'll be right back. To hear more from the band and their latest album, check them out at spelltalk.com or on facebook.com/spelltalk. Hobo with the Shotgun was the talk of last year's Sundance Festival. It's a horror exploitation film directed by Jason Eisner and written by John Davies. It was originally conceived as a fake trailer for a contest used to help promote the Tarantino-Rodriguez double feature Grindhouse, but ultimately developed into its own full feature movie. Jimmy Martin chatted with director Jason Eisner before Sundance back in December 2010.
This idea just kind of been in your head for Hobo with a Shotgun?
Well, we've been floating it around for maybe like 4 years now. There was originally, I don't know if you know, but there was a contest put on by Robert Rodriguez and Southwest for a Grindhouse competition. Yeah, and the idea came to full fruition when that contest came about, but I think the year before we've been kind of dancing around with the idea, which was all just kind of spawned off there's this local pizza shop that we hang out in Dartmouth called Ronnie's Pizza, and that's where one of the places we go to come up with ideas. And we were there, it was me and my best friend who's the writer of Hobo, and there was another one of my friends, his name is Mojo, and
nice.
At the time Mojo had really long hair and he just bought this like airsoft shotgun, and we were coming up with ideas for movies, and he just said, "You should make a movie about me." And John looked at him and said, "What, a hobo with a shotgun?"
Nice.
And once we heard that, like, those words go together, it just sounded so awkward and hilarious.
That's fantastic.
And so, yeah, instantly, right off that, we started coming up with ideas for a world that would involve a hobo with a shotgun.
So, the fake trailer come... The idea you had before the contest for Southwest, but did the contest push you to make this trailer?
Yeah, absolutely. When we heard that they wanted people to make Grindhouse trailers or exploitation style trailers in the 70s and 80s, that was where we were going with it in the first place with the original idea, and so we thought it was just a perfect match.
And who kind of helped you make the trailer? You said your friends, but was it more family and friend style or?
Yeah, family and friends, and our producer Rob Cotterill is another. He's part of our group. It was the first time me and him ever got to work together on anything. He's been an AD on this show done back home called The Trailer Park Boys. I met him on the set of that show, and when I told him the idea for Hobo with a Shotgun, we wanted to make a fake trailer, he was so stoked. He's like, "All right, let's just start doing it tonight." So the night he found out about the contest, we actually went out and started shooting stuff for the trailer.
Nice. Yeah. Nothing like no procrastination there.
No. And it was just, when we made that trailer, it was just friends. Like, it was just all, like, a couple of my friends and Dave Brunt, the guy who played the hobo.
And he's just a friend of yours?
I was working at a comic book shop, and he was one of these guys who would just, like, kind of come into the store and hang out. It was a comic book video game store.
Okay.
So we would, he would always want to play racing games or war games. And I just thought he was such an interesting character. He'd always tell me stories about his life. He found out I was interested in making films, and he would come in, and when there would be no one around, we would act out little scenarios because he was interested in acting. And usually it was like a cop and robber situation because he loved playing a cop. And so we would just act out these little crazy scenes together.
Oh, that's funny.
And I just wanted to see like how it could work with him. And so when the idea of that trailer came up, I just thought it was perfect. But he had never acted a day before in his life.
So did anybody from the original, from the original trailer, did you bring them on to the feature film or?
Yeah. There was a bunch of people. A lot of people who helped make it, like even Mojo, he was in the trailer a little bit, and he was like one of the big helps on Hobo. And like, yeah, there's a couple little cameos here and there that came from the trailer and reappeared back into the feature film. If you need someone to hold, if you're
when they started making, you said it's this Grindhouse, trailer, kind of, the fake trailers, what was your reaction when you started seeing how they were going to make Machete and that they were going to make, I think they're making Thanksgiving too. Did you pretty much think that, like, now we can, Hobo can get off the ground with the popularity of these going off, or?
No, that never came into my mind, really. I was excited when I heard that Machete was getting made into a film, just because I loved that trailer. I loved Danny Trejo, and I knew he really wanted to make that film, and it's perfect for him. Like, that film just had to get made.
Yeah.
But we never... It never really came into conversations about, you know, that movie being made and then our film being made. We've kind of just doing our own thing and not, I don't know. The whole, like, Grindhouse contest thing kind of just went back of our minds, and we were just making our movie.
What do you think, because it seems like it's kind of sparking up now, and I don't know if it's because film companies or anybody, you know, they kind of want to make sure that there's an audience behind it, you know, 100% more than taking a risk kind of back in the day. And so I've seen these people, like, well, they'll make a fake trailer, or they'll make, you know, a short footage. And the first things that come to mind is, one is Machete again. But then also, like, Tron Legacy that just came out. They showed this 5 minutes at Comic-Con to garner whether it was, you know, worth moving forward with. And based on the reaction of it, do you think that's a pretty good practice? You know, nowadays, if you want to...
Yeah, like, I heard Black Dynamite. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh, of course.
Those guys made a fake trailer, although it's not. I don't think it's online.
Mm-hmm.
But they made a fake trailer for Black Dynamite before to help raise money to make the film.
Yeah.
And also, there was this recent movie called Clown, and they said it was from the director of Eli Roth, and it's a great trailer. And it did so well on the internet, and Eli Roth thought it was hilarious. That his name was attached to it.
Yeah.
And I guess he's met with the guys, and I saw Eli Roth posting on Twitter that he's producing the movie for them.
Would you pretty much agree that's a pretty good practice, or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's just a, I don't know, I think it's a good thing for, like, filmmakers to do as well, too, because it just, you know, it gives you a chance to get out and, you know, realize your idea in some way so that, and you could see, like, an audience reaction to see if people are actually interested in your idea and in your characters. And it's just fun. I gotta say, like, when you're doing stuff like that and there's not much pressure and you're doing it with your friends, it's a blast.
Rucker Hauer,
yeah,
is your hobo. How did he come onto the project?
Our producers asked us, and our distributor asked us who we thought could play the hobo. Originally, like, we planned for, like, a year or two to have Dave Brunt, like, play the hobo with a shotgun. But Dave, he's on disability. He had a hip replacement when he was, like, 20 years old. He got hit by an 18-wheeler.
Oh.
And so he's, like, when we shot Hobo, you're seeing, like, the original trailer, like, all that frustration and him screaming is, like, legit. Like, that's after, like, take 20.
Oh, really?
Furious, like, all those days. And I just knew when it was, like, eventually I just knew when it came time to make the feature that it would just be way too hard on him, and I didn't want to torture him, and I just knew it would. Because the character, it's so physical, and Dave's an old man, and that was, like, one of the hardest decisions in my life, was to figure out who could replace Dave, because Dave is just so great. Like, he was the hobo with the shotgun. Like, people love him.
Yeah.
We were coming up with names, and I was sitting down with Dave Brunt because I wanted him to help me pick who could do him justice. Rucker Hauer has always been a huge, he's always been a huge influence to us. I don't know, like, they told us to write a list of whoever we thought we could think of, and we put him, like, at the top of the list thinking, all right, this will get scratched off really fast, like, there's no way we're going to get him.
Yeah.
Sure enough, like, we got a call back, and Rucker had read the script. He thought it was crazy. But he wanted to talk with me and talk about the project, and so I got on a Skype call with him, talked for over an hour, and we just really hit it off. He decided to do the film, and next thing I knew, he was in Halifax with us. Now, it's so crazy because, like me and John growing up, and when we were discovering filmmaking and we were watching lots of movies, I have, like, honestly, I'm not just saying this because Rucker Hauer is in my movie.
Yeah.
He was, like, our first, like, favorite actor. Like, he was, like, the first actor that was, like, teaching us, like, the mechanics of acting.
Yeah.
Before we were looking at films and, you know, trying to understand the mechanics of filmmaking and where directors were putting their cameras and lighting and how they were moving the camera.
Yeah.
And then it was Rucker Hauer when we saw, like, The Blood of Heroes and The Hitcher. He showed us that, like, an actor can do a lot by not saying very much.
Oh, yeah.
And Rucker Hauer can just, like, look and, like, give a look, and he can say so much just from that look. And that was just so much about, like, that was the hobo is very much that kind of character, and he's just being perfect.
He's a strong silent type.
Yeah, I still can't believe like we made a Rutger Hauer movie.
Yeah, when I saw that he was in it, I was like, holy shit, how'd they pull that one off?
Yeah, man, you can imagine, like, I'm going to get on a Skype call with, like, one of my favorite actors of all time.
Yeah.
I was shitting bricks, man. I was sweating.
Oh, it's funny. I've got a sense of it from the trailer, but I definitely know from Treevenge. So how much blood would you say is in Hobo, and are we talking more than gallons or barrels?
Oh, it's barrels. I guess. I don't know. It's a crazy amount of blood. I don't know the precise number, but like every day I'd walk on set and I would see like 20 buckets of blood. We had a whole truck set aside that we called the blood truck, and there's actually like a little feature on the internet about it. It's like a little behind the scenes thing called the blood truck. We always had that like on standby. There was always a blood truck nearby.
Nice.
You can check out Hobo with the Shotgun on Netflix or pick it up on Blu-ray or DVD. As a heads up about Eisner's future work, he's currently in pre-production for his film The ABCs of Death for a 2012 release. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sound Waves from the Underground. For more information about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, visit slugmag.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or maybe even an angry thought about the show, send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our show's theme and music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design was by T-Done, technical design by Kate O'Connor, with audio mastering from Andrew Glassett. Special thanks to Adam Sherlock and Eric Tomorrow for their help and support. Make sure you grab next week's show when we speak with the Fear Factory, the Melvins, and listen to music from October's Localized featuring the Suicycles and YYBS. This is JP. Until next time, have a rad fucking week, bros.